space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life, a new civilization, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Greetings, salutations, and welcome to Retrek. I'm Captain Jim, and with me, of course, Sir Admiral Elliot.
Hi there.
And Dr. Squee.
Dragon and Prosper.
And this week, we're on our penultimate episode of The Dominion War. We're finally here. And of Deep Space Nine, indeed.
Well, no, I'm sure that we have got more episodes of DS9 to do in the future.
No, but they are the penultimate episodes of Deep Space Nine.
I didn't say that.
That's not what we were doing.
I just didn't want anyone listening or watching to panic that we were going to do DS9.
We're never going to talk about it. No, we will talk about DS9.
I'm sure Trekkies all over the world just went into an uproar
and panic.
The penultimate episodes, which we're covering the penultimate episodes, they're penultimate episodes that we will ever cover of Deep Space Nine. I hope that clarifies.
Exactly. Yes, we'll put it in the show notes. We'll explain. Right. But yeah, these are the penultimate episodes.
It's a funny one because it's really exciting where we are with it. But it's actually also quite sad that I worked out we... just short of 3 years we've been doing this story. Well, so it's a bit sad that we finally got to end it.
I know.
The other thing which I find a bit bonkers, the other fine thing which is kind of like funny with these two episodes is because we are so much into the ongoing plot, it's kind of quite funny. The first one really is, even though it forwards the plot, it's kind of almost standalone by itself.
Yeah.
The second one has a very standalone plot line. Sorry, but we're like someone's just come through the door. Has a very standalone plot line in the middle of it with the Ferengi riddle. So I'll hand over to you guys. Oh, what, you're going to stop now? Of course he is.
No, you're right. I think with these two, like you say, the first one is... probably the most focused of this entire arc in terms of its telling largely a single story. It's dealing with essentially two main cast members and one guest star. So considering how all over the place and all the different elements we've had in the episodes up until now, this one is really quite reserved. And then the next episode... feels like it's kind of, oh right, we've got other characters that aren't directly tied into the war. We better wrap them up quickly. Let's have an episode where we just wrap up loose ends and we'll get this silly romance storyline wrapped up. And then we'll sweep all that under the rug. And then we'll have one scene at the end that reminds you that we've got an actual story.
Yeah. But we'll get there. The kind of friendly part. It's kind of a bit goofy. Like, we'll get into it, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's like, what I really kind of like, especially after watching the first episode, which is a great kind of bromance between Bashir and O'Brien, it's kind of like, feels like it's, broadly speaking, a finale of that kind of relationship, even though it's explored a bit in the finale. It sort of seems like it was almost a missed opportunity. The next episode, you didn't have Quark and Odo. Would have been lovely to have a...
yeah, that would have been
a very definitive moment. But I like to have an episode which kind of says goodbye to the characters before their...
oh, you know what would have been really good that they've missed here? We've got Odo. We start this episode. Odo's in the bio bed. He's ill. Bashir tells him he's maybe got 2 weeks to live. How good would it have been to have had Quark at Odo's bedside and had an episode maybe just with them bickering all night or something?
What I was thinking was that when I said about having a final episode with those two, I think it would have naturally... gone after this episode. You could have had him like, okay, yeah, he's better, but he's been restricted to kind of like Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, that'd work.
And he's going through some logs and everything, and Quark keeps on coming in annoying him. Like, you'd almost do a sort of Rear Window version of Deep Space Nine somehow, and have him just be this annoying guy who just like keeps on coming in. pretending like he doesn't care, but obviously he does, as they always do.
You could have had the bickering at bedside in this episode to keep going back to it.
Well, I was thinking, it's like, if you do that, then you've got already the kind of like, this is O'Brien Bashir thing. I didn't want to take away from that. However, if you just have it as the next episode, like, again, you can just make up some malarkey about, okay, well, you seem better, but we want to check this. This is a last thing.
Quark helps him recuperate.
Yeah, without... and annoys the fuck out of him while he's doing brilliant classic.
Yeah, you're right. It's a...
Whereas the one which we get, I know we're going to get into this bit, but it's like straight from the garbled transmission, which you know exactly what they're doing.
Of course, yeah. Like,
it's a little bit painful. The only thing which kind of really makes it kind of really fun is obviously Armin Shimerman. Like he's always great.
Yeah, he gets to have good fun. But anyway, we'll go through the first one then. So Extreme Measures. And yeah, Odo's ill. They've all come back. I'd forgotten that detail. I always thought that Kira and Garak stayed there, but no, they do come back with him. I thought they never left Cardassia. In my head, I didn't remember that they'd come back for this little bit. but... I love Odo's justification for why he doesn't want Kira to seem like this, because she watched Beryl die in this don't remind us of Beryl. I mean, come on.
Although I thought it was a lot mean of him to go, it's like, you know what, I don't want you, like, this is where Beryl died, this is where I might die. Quite frankly, you're a fucking curse woman. Like, I mean, I thought it was mean of him. I thought it was cruel. I assume that's what he was getting at, yeah?
Yeah, what's happened to Shakaar? Is he all right? Anyway.
He never came to this room with you. That's why he's all right.
Don't ever remind us of Beryl. Thank you very much. and then there's a bit where Odo says, like, oh, you know, I must look horrible with all my gooey, flaky bits. And Kira goes, I don't care how you look, Odo. It's like, I think that's fair because Odo's punching a bit, let's be honest. You know, I don't think it was ever about the looks.
You say that, but like then Dax kind of puts her head around the door going, he's like, oh, yeah. You want to take the piss out of me dating the guy with the see-through head, do you? What about Flaky over there?
Oh, that'd have been a good bit, actually, yeah.
Yeah, like,
Captain Budney doesn't look so bad now.
I know it's insensitive. I know it's bad timing, but you did fucking kind of rip the shit out of me in two different bodies about Captain Budney.
Yeah. Exactly. At least his head's not flaking off. You might be able to, even if it were, you wouldn't be able to tell because it's see-through.
Yeah.
Anyway, so O'Brien and Bashir fess up to Sisko about, well, we think Section 31's behind it all and we're trying to lower him here.
Although, I love it. They confess to him. And then the second when, like, they decide that O'Brien's going in, they're going, should we tell anyone? Nah. I mean, we're just using this experimental technology with no one to observe it.
Yeah.
And we've already told the captain, so there's no reason why not to, quite frankly. But nah, let's just be secret.
Yeah, still. Wouldn't it make more sense? Like, they finally fessed up to the captain what they've done. And, like, Machine's like, and I sent some false reports to Starfleet. Like,
yeah, did Sisko not check that?
Yeah.
Did nobody like send an email to Sisko saying, like, oh, by the way, well done that your doctor's cured the...
He's this major medical report from the doctor that's gone out that he's cured this the sickness. Yeah.
Does it not...
And hasn't Sisko gone down? Yeah, well done there, Dr. Howzo.
Does his email, like, does it not have, like... Not have like a keyword filter or something, you know, if you're sending out emails saying I've cured the founders, you just think that I'd get flagged somewhere and Sisko would be aware, but apparently not.
There's a world. Why would you pay attention to some intelligence which would be pretty fucking wild?
Maybe.
There's a lot of this, and like we're laughing at it now because of what emails will do. But bear in mind, this is still in the 90s.
This is true.
So they still felt like it looked really futuristic. Every single iPad for a different report.
Yeah.
Send them all on one report. Like you had to have a pile of them.
I understand. But even if you go, say they imagine that this is like the equivalent of a telephone, for instance, you think it's like, you think they might get calls back going, it's like, what, you like, that's pretty damn, well, like, important to the war.
You'd actually think it, in a time of war, the air distance that it's got to use subspace communication, you'd think that there was some sort of filter and all that to make sure that things weren't being spied on.
Yeah, it'd pick out the key. Anyway, but the other explanation is that Bashir does this sort of thing all the time. Like, and Sisko's just turned the filters off because it's like, oh, every 2 weeks he claims that he's cured AIDS. So I've just got fed up with him, you know. It's always a wind-up. He's never actually cured anything.
Well, actually, no, I think it's just got boring because with his, like, now openly genetically enhanced brain, he is just curing AIDS one week, cancer the next.
Yeah.
Like, he's going, oh, for Christ's sake. Okay, look, I'm sick and tired of hearing all the things you've... All right, we get it. You're intelligent. It's all right. Yeah. Someone's trying to win a war here. Could you just copy me into every email?
You're curing fictional diseases now. You're taking it that far. Like, come on. Anyway, so that's
I'll have you know, Bashiritis is a very serious disease, which I've cured now.
And also, like, okay, we fessed up to Sisko. Sisko's like, right, lads, that's a little bit naughty. You're not doing anything else shifty, are you? No, no, no. Did you tell him about the illegal Romulan mind scanner?
Yeah. Which is also kind of like, I love the fact that whenever there's something after the Romulan ale, it's like anything that's shifty, it's coming from the Romulans. Like, it's bad.
Always.
Like, they got the mind probe, they got the ale. Like, God, the amount of illegal Romulan penis pumps which were on the market and stuff isn't even worth mentioning. It's like,
and they have a special double one for the Klingons.
Rich for her pleasure.
Bashir wants to destroy Section 31. That's what he's decided to do now. And to this end, Sloane does his thing where he just appears in Bashir's bedroom, which is, like, it's getting quite cliche now. He's done it, like, three times.
It is very creepy as well, like, he just appears in people's bedrooms and watches them sleep for a bit.
Well, that's it. It's like, how long does he sit there? Do you reckon he knocks stuff over or coughs loudly and just,
There's got to be some because
he... No, he's sat in the dark for an hour until the person naturally wakes up. He's like, this is the worst part of the job. I've just got to wait for him to wake up, otherwise it's dramatic.
Well, he's maybe got this weird kink that he likes watching people
maybe,
sleep.
Yeah.
Sorry, Sloane, you're here. And what are those tissues next to you? Never mind the tissues.
He's like... He's just like texting his mate, like, has yours woke up yet? No, neither's mine. All right. Should we have a bet on who wakes up for anyway?
And so I can't help but notice, like, trousers down by your ankle. Oh, sorry. I forgot to get that again. This is getting embarrassing. It's like, it's also, I do love the, this is just what you have to do sometimes for the plot, but it's like, it's a convenient level of technology they've got. They can appear and disappear like shadows in the night. They can be any technology you've got. But if you need them to get captured, damn it, force fields. We have nothing.
You can get them with the force field. And then phaser in. Like,
it's the same thing as the ID badges, which they wear over. We're a secret organization. What's that on your chest? Never mind that.
Wear these very nice leather uniforms that.
Yeah.
Leather uniforms and black badges and so that we're secret.
It's like we realised that back in the 23rd century we were a bit too obvious with us com badges, so now we just wear these Gestapo outfits.
Well, I was about to say, it's like the Gestapo, isn't it? Like the secret police, we'll all wear a trench hat and a black long black trench coat.
Like, we're not quite as obvious as we used to be, but once you know about us, you can summon us regularly, and there's absolutely no problem with it.
Yeah, I mean,
anyway,
Bashir's doctor's reasoning was pretty decent.
It was good, And he starts to interrogate him, and Sloane tries to kill himself.
Well,
and
he starts with, like, why did you brought me? He goes, I want the cure.
Oh, yeah, he falls for it, doesn't he?
Yeah, but you found the cure. No, I haven't. And he's like, what makes you think I know what it is? Well, you'd need to know it to be able to delete it from your record.
Yeah,
having said that, you search for, like, a changeling cure. That's probably it. I'm just going to say.
Like, but we know that you can't do that, because if you could, Cisco's internet filters would have picked it up when he sent the email. So
yeah, no, sorry. It's like changing cure. In brackets, don't tell Cisco. That's what it's called.
Oh, yeah.
All those medical records.
Yeah, maybe.
Cisco, nothing to see here.
But it's good that Bashir gets one over on Sloane intellectually at this point, because Sloane does think that he's got Bashir completely figured out. And it's good that Bashir gets a win at this point in the episode. And then they're like, well, he's dead. Should we use the probe anyway? Let's go for it. But, okay, lads, well,
we can't use the probe, so let's do this instead.
Yeah, the ethics are out the window at this point. We do not care.
I'm not even going to try to remember it, because Bashir just goes, like O'Brien said, well, that's it then. And Bashir goes, get me a techno babble.
Yeah, get me a thing that there's still residual sparks of jibliblib in his brain. And yeah. It's fine. He's only mostly dead, so
we've only got 42 minutes, which incidentally is how long an episode lasts.
Exactly. And I did like the fact they made it an episode length without adverts was the exact time they said that. I like sneaking, but
I was also thinking
real time,
if you watch this on TV with the adverts in America, because it'd be an hour long show with what it's already had when it gets to this point.
Yeah, you're right,
probably pretty much.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
42 minutes of airtime left.
This is an episode which is in real time, and it's like they don't make a big thing of it, it's just there. Yeah. And also, I'm pretty sure, because it's like all standing sets, I think this counts as a bottle episode as well. Even though it's a couple sets, it's all standing sets which weren't created for this episode.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a bottle episode. Yeah. And I do like the conceit that it's like, okay, we're going into Sloane's mind. Prepare yourself, Miles. It could be any sort of crazy thing anywhere that Sloane's been in the whole galaxy. And it could be absolutely the station.
I mean, it's back to what I was saying about whenever they have an orb experience. So any of the main crew, they'll like, well, to be honest with you, let's face it. If it's the first one where Cisco has it, they'll have characters from his past and everything, and like, you know, Jennifer there and all this stuff. If it's future ones, basically it's just whoever's about, they'll be in the vision, even if they're not really that relevant to the person.
In Emissary, they had... like all the people from, I can't remember his ship that got destroyed, where Jennifer died.
Saratoga,
but it was all them characters.
Yeah, it was.
Exactly. Whereas like now, now
it's sort of like, oh, an orb experience. Right. Kira's on the credits and she hasn't done much this episode.
Yeah. Because one of the prophets in Emissary is Captain Picard. Or Locutus, and it's like, could you appear as Locutus again? Absolutely not. Do you know how much Patrick Stewart costs?
The other kind of like thing which I really appreciate watching this back was, I think that everything that Sloane does to distract them, even though it's definitely his mind is playing these games, I think this is genuinely all stuff that his brain is kicking out as he's dying as well. I think it's both. I think he's clever enough that he can manipulate it still. But I think genuinely those people are people from his life he regrets, like has regrets for. That is his wife. I believe it's all true as well, which is kind of a nice little extra layer.
I think you've got like two Sloanes effectively, haven't you? You've got good Sloane who's happy to see them. And he seems genuinely to have affection for Bashir, and he's like, yeah, of course, I'll tell you what, it's snibbers. And that's his subconscious fighting back and
I actually think Sloane does have an affection for the doctor.
I think he does,
because he definitely wants to recruit him, because he wouldn't be spending so much. He wouldn't have spent so much time previously if he didn't.
No, exactly. But I think this is sort of the least guarded we've ever seen. Yeah, it's this nice version of Sloane.
And he's
think there's a duality as well, because like if Section 31's been going that long, in that time, they will at least in a handful of times over the years pulled the Federation's balls out of the fire. Like they've certainly saved them over the years. Yet, of course, morally we want to bring them down because they're morally kind of wrong. However, they have saved them. That's a kind of complicated thing. And I think it's the same for Sloane. It's like he believes his way is the right way. But he like even says, like in this episode and other episodes, like how much he admires Bashir, how much Federation needs people like him. But he doesn't want to admit like that they could do it without him. And it's the same thing on both sides, really. It's kind of quite an interesting duality.
Yeah, it's a shame we didn't get more of these two characters together, like, really. I know there's a million and one spin-off books, but...
Like, it does say, though, doesn't it, that he is protecting the Federation.
Yeah.
What you want from the Federation, you can't have without me doing this.
Yeah, and that...
You good men, really, like... Deep down in a place you don't like to talk about at parties, you want me there up on the wall. It's the same kind of thing. It is.
It's absolutely. It's like what needs to go on behind the scenes so that everyone else can have the paradise sort of thing. It's really interesting stuff. So then Bad Sloane turns up and kills Good Sloane. and this is where in the real world Ezri has found them and Sisko's there. He's like, oh, for goodness, oh, I can't believe Lee, Romulan mind probe. I should have known.
They just mentioned this when they
what the fuck is this that the doctors had O'Brien built? That is his mind.
I should have known. The way they were talking this morning, I nearly said, have you got an illegal Romulan mind probe? I knew I should have pushed it a bit harder. But anyway, and then the Section 31 guy starts shooting him. And this is where you get this wonderful scene where it's the two of them sat up against the wall. And, you know, I've said so many times, I think this is like the greatest male friendship on TV. This scene just absolutely encapsulates it. I love it. Where Bashir says, okay, you love your wife, but you like me a little bit more.
And O'Brien starts by going, Keiko doesn't really like you because she thinks I like you more.
Yeah.
And he turns around.
Well, you do.
Well, you do, don't you? You spend more time with me.
And then
they've got to kind of push in the thing with Ezri. It's like, love my wife. Well, I love Ezri.
And he says, passionately. And it's like, a bit more passion, Sid. You know, sell me on it. But let's put that bit aside because the rest of it is just so brilliant because it's kind of this thing that O'Brien's macho pride won't let him admit that that's true. He's like, no, I love my wife. Don't be silly. And Bashir's like, well, I'm not saying
Of course you love your wife, but you like me more.
It's just you like me more. You like hanging out with me more.
Well, there's a sort of very... we'll talk about it at the end, but like there is a kind of like very subtle callback to this at the end, which I really like. They don't do it as in like they copy any dialogue or they hang a jacket on it, but they just kind of, it's there, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, I just love that Bashir's comfortable enough in himself to admit that he likes O'Brien more. But admittedly, he's only been passionately in love with Ezri for 2 minutes, so maybe that's why. But O'Brien's pride won't quite let him say that to Bashir's face.
Well, that's the thing, great. I think that's always been established, which is lovely. I mean, their friendship was rooted in, to begin with, Julian absolutely loving and admiring O'Brien and wanting to kind of ingratiate himself. He was like an excited little puppy in those earlier episodes. And O'Brien was just like, no, I can't be fucked with this. No, I don't need any extra friends. No, you're not going to be my mate. It sort of like reminds me of, for anyone who likes the films, of Kevin Smith, him and Jason Mewes. They became friends in real life because he was basically tagging along with him because they had friends in common. And then when the other friends weren't around, they're going, what can we do now? What can we do now? And it's like, what? No, we're not friends. We know friends, but we're not friends. And I feel like it's the same thing with their friends. Like, look, we work together. We have colleagues in common, but we're not friends. And before he knows it, they're buddies. You know, it's like,
The turning point was that episode where they got drunk and sang Jerusalem together. And I feel like that was where they turned. But yeah, I just love
that line in that. It's like, you know, like people either love you or hate you. It's like, I used to hate you, and now,
yeah,
now I don't hate you. No, shut up.
Yeah.
Classic kind of like, and
I think at this point, O'Brien would admit that he loves Bashir, but he just doesn't want to say how much he likes him now,
He doesn't want to admit that he actually likes him more than he does his wife.
I think he would admit to loving him, but he wouldn't out and out say it in those words.
Maybe not. He would
express his love for him without saying the words, because, yeah, he's just not emotionally open enough, which is lovely. And it seems very kind of like Irish male as well to have that kind
of thing, but
not say it in those words.
Again, like, I think this is very progressive for the time, because there's no implication of there being any romantic relationship between the two, but there's also there's none of the sort of gay panic you saw in a lot of 90s TV shows. Like, you don't have O'Brien saying, "Oh, don't be disgusting. Of course, I don't like you more than my wife." You know, it's just so well measured and put across.
This is why it's the best romance that's been
put on TV. And I mean, let's face it, the one which is highlight these days a lot because it's there is like Friends. They do, there's so much stuff where, like, Joey are so worried about looking gay and everything. Whereas with this one, even when O'Brien's being resistant, he isn't being homophobic in any way.
No.
It's not like like worry about how they're being seen. It's just like, no, I won't admit how I'm feeling about my mate.
Yeah.
It's just that basic.
And this bit, it really does sort of touch on something, and it does make it sort of challenges the viewer to go, oh, is that true? Do I actually like my
mate,
friends more than I like my romantic partners? And and is that okay to feel like that? You know, it's just great that it throws out there.
Something like, you do have something like the Bashir and Garrick storyline, where there is a kind of like very heavily suggested kind of like erotic subtext. I think especially coming from like Garrick is trying to seduce him in more ways than one. And I think only because O'Brien's kind of like, Bashir's held back a bit that they don't end up together at any point.
Yeah.
He's a bit more guarded in that relationship.
Yeah.
But I think that's completely open to the kind of LGBTQ story, kind of like in there.
I think it
Whereas the O'Brien is. And Bashir is just a lovely friendship. Just it's love
between teammates,
you know.
So getting back to the actual story, then. So they decide, right? O'Brien talks him into, let's go and let's open this last door, and they open the last door. Oh, but then they wake up because Sloane's died. For me, Star Trek and TV in general has pulled this trick one too many times for me to actually buy into it. There was no way I thought they weren't still in Sloane's mind. No, at the time I knew they were still in Sloane's mind.
I'm trying to remember because it's like it's been done a little less than that time.
I'm thinking maybe the first time I watched it, I maybe bought that he'd woke up. But I was still thought, well, they're going to do something to save us.
Yeah, I just don't. DS9's done this multiple times.
You're right. So. I didn't at the time.
I can't remember the first time I watched it. It's, you know, we've said this before. It's really hard to remember.
It is, yeah.
What you thought the first time you see it, because we've all watched these episodes. I wouldn't like to think how many times over years.
Yeah.
And then we, again, Star Trek and TV in general does this a lot where something's not quite right, but then you get the clue that gives it away. And in this case, it's the book. Quite a nice spin on it that Bashir's not finished the book in real life. So therefore, the fiction of the book can't be completed.
Yeah. But that relies on the fact that Sloane's never read it to Tale of Two Cities.
You're right, actually. No, I think Sloane is probably...
I think they should have maybe used a more obscure book.
I don't think...
Or maybe Sloane could have just made up the ending of it instead of just starting it again.
There's two things. One is, like, like Sloane kind of read every book that's ever, like, that's a classic, of course, but like everyone's got that classic they've never read. But also, I believe that he is so fixated on the job and like learning practical stuff that he doesn't have time for fiction books. You know, maybe he's just that, like, it's like with Einstein, he was said to have like 10 copies of the same suit so he could take the idea of picking what he's going to wear out of the equation so his mind could be on higher things. Maybe it's a similar thing. He doesn't bother with the fictional books because he wants to learn everything.
Maybe. Or maybe just Dickens isn't as popular in the future. Maybe people...
Well, O'Brien seemed to get it straight away as soon as he said the first line, he knew exactly what book it was.
Yeah.
I loved it, though, because it's like, it's like Best of Times, Worst of Time, which, of course, is not new to Star Trek from the movies.
Yeah.
But also, it was one of my dad's favorite books. He had this old leather. So, yeah, that was a nice little thing for me.
So they're going to go find the cure again now. And you get Bashir, all of a sudden, is fascinated by all the pads and the information they've got. And this is quite cool. And you can understand why he's seduced by it, because he's like, oh, you've got something about the Klingons. Oh, you've got something about the Romulans over here.
Well, this is Sloane's last line of defense against him getting through. He knows he's only got minutes left.
Yeah. Distract Bashir.
Bashir's got to the cure, so Bashir has the cure in his hand. He's got it. He knows what it is.
No, it was O'Brien who was finding the cure. Then give it. Yeah, so because he was getting tricked.
Yeah, but like the point is that they've got the cure, and it's so distract them to keep them there so they die with him.
Well, I think he actually wanted to distract him so he never even found it. Like, you know, as long as they keep him there, it doesn't matter either way.
I think it was that, like, you've reached the point where it is, I'm keeping you here so you die with me.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, regardless of whether he's found it or not, if he doesn't get out.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, I mean, it's when Bashir was looking at these, I was thinking, it's like, he's got a photographic memory, though. Anything he's seen, at least, is like, you know, he can at least say to Marta, it's like, by the way, this guy, watch out for him. You know, it's like
he's kind of
soaked up a little bit. But it's like, it must be so frustrating to know all the answers, the whole bag of marbles is right here.
It's all there.
It kind of like going to other media, it kind of reminds me of The Last Crusade, where he wants to get the cup, but like, you know, getting our life is the thing. It's, you know,
and then O'Brien
said the voice of reason, look, we've got the cure, let's get out. That's what we're here
both
for.
Both hands, Indiana.
We're not here to bring down Section 31 today.
Yeah, I love little bits like this. It's really nice. It's like it's only your friend, it's only your loved one, it's only your dad in the case of Indiana Jones, who kind of pulls you away from being obsessed with something so much that it can kill you. Yeah. And they even had it in a previous episode, I was just thinking of where Jake has to do it for Sisko.
Yes.
Like when he's in the rapture.
And then they come out of it. Bashir says Ezri's beautiful. I wonder if anything will come of that. The cure, Odo. And then I know this is one of my pet peeves, and I know we had an issue about it last time, but why do they always say O'Brien's middle name? At the end, it's like, toast to you, Miles Edward O'Brien.
They overplay it, but it's to say that Bashir knows that thing about him, basically. That's all it's there for. They do understand their voice as well.
It's just this thing that they keep
breaking into quarks as well. And
true.
And they've obviously not just got in and nicked a pint, because, like, it's quite easy if you work somewhere and you're doing late nights to have a pint from the draft and not be noticed that anything's gone. But when you start nicking the really old single malts from behind the bar, that gets noticed. You don't.
I like the thing they paid for that.
This is probably why Quark's struggling, actually. This is why Ferengi society is falling apart, which leads
fucking
us nicely
Starfleet,
on there.
Fucking Starfleet's breaking into his bar every night.
Got money, Quark. Don't worry.
The thing is, I think Miles Edward O'Brien is honest enough to pay for his drinks.
Well, you'd hope so, wouldn't you?
And for my liking, use his middle name as much as possible. It's a classy fucking middle name, and I'm not just saying that because I might have that as my middle name.
No, well, that I'm not saying it's not a classy middle name, but I just don't get why, of all the characters, we middle name O'Brien more than any other character.
My full name's Dr. Edward O'Squee. That's
there we go.
Yeah, I can't think of another character.
No.
The middle name a lot.
No, they do it. Yeah, they do it so often.
Middle name gets... them a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I mean, and it seems to be
enough
every time...
for us all to know who it is.
Yeah, oh God, yeah, they always do it, like, and they always seem to give it to Bashir to prove his friendship to him.
Yeah, like, it's just odd. It's one of my weird DS9 pet peeves.
And what I was saying before, it's like, I do love at the end, they don't do a direct callback to the scene earlier, but they go, it's like, oh, I'm just going home to take out. And he goes, oh, you want a cup? Yeah, sure. And it's like, it's a lovely callback without, like,
yeah,
like hammering it home. And then he throws it out the board, and it's just a nice little button on the episode.
I think it's that thing that O'Brien is proving the point why he loves his wife, because he knows that she stayed up to make sure he's got a hot meal when he gets in.
But then he also shows that he likes Bashir better because he wants him to come and keep him company. So,
yeah,
I'm still thinking about it.
There's also that. I mean, the reason why I say I think this is a great episode is because it does wrap up their kind of friendship outside of the kind of small bit we get in the next episode, and to be or the last sort of two-parter.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, that whole thing of like. Again, they've kind of got this really long story arc, and they wait till the like last two-parter to introduce the fact that O'Brien's going off to Starfleet Academy to teach engineers. Just
because,
well, it's kind of convenient to the plot that everyone's got somewhere to go to. Yeah. It's like, why didn't they just introduce that a little bit earlier? Maybe have that as like something that he's keeping from O'Brien. Done. Bashir.
Yeah, you could have had sort of mid-season 7 that he got a communique and was asked if he'd go. You could have dropped it in. He got communique, and he was keeping it that when the war ends, he's leaving.
And you could have had it when they're in the kind of like mind probe whatever thing, and there goes like he's they're just that feeling he's keeping a little something from his friend,
yeah.
How much they're bonding, and yeah.
Oh, you know,
and then that payoff would have been so satisfying.
They could have actually done something with Keiko here and had. You know, Keiko saying like, yeah, this has been pretty bad trying to raise his kids in the middle of a war. Yeah, I suppose maybe they don't want to make Keiko look like she nags all the time.
Yeah, because they've never done that with her. Yeah, that's when they don't.
And they'd also have to pay her to be in the episode.
Well, I did love it when they go to the bit where it's like, Keiko's sleeping just through those doors. It's like, God, it's just so painful when you know.
Yeah, and neither do you pointing at the camera.
It's that thing in it, like, let's be honest, for a TV series, season 7 has a huge budget in DS9.
Yeah.
And there's points where you have to cut things. So you have, and they've got loads of characters to need to have in. And there's certain ones they're going to go, we can do without them in this episode. We'll save a few.
Well, that's it. Like...
And I've got to say, I mean, I probably would have cared, though, more about that plot line of Bashir not knowing that O'Brien's going back to Starfleet, and I would have cared about him going back to Starfleet if they'd introduced it a bit earlier.
Yeah,
it's
I agree with you.
This thing I've been keeping from you that you just heard about 3 seconds ago as the audience yourselves. It's like, well, why do I care then? I just heard it.
That's it.
I don't feel like it's a long-held secret or anything.
Yeah, like I say, they should have dropped it in mid-season. You just had to have a communique where you agreed to go. You had a little chat with Keiko about it, and that was it. And you just have that he's keeping this secret all the way through. Then he's not mentioning it.
Yeah, that'd have worked.
Because you don't know how long the war's going to last. Well, we do, but...
We do. 3 episodes, in fact. moving on to the penultimate episode of DS9, The Dogs of War. Nice bit of weird Star Trek continuity, this episode is directed by Avery Brooks, and the penultimate episode of TNG, Preemptive Strike, was directed by Patrick Stewart.
Oh, that's a nice little bit.
And I suppose if you want to take it one further, the penultimate Star Trek movie, Star Trek V, was directed by William Shatner. For the original crew. So all the first 3 captains all directed their penultimate adventures.
Episode.
And if you want to hear about how badly that went with Star Trek V, enjoy Sci-Fi Weekend, where we'll be talking about where Trek goes wrong in the movie.
We will indeed. So this episode, Ezri and Bashir are feeling being a little bit awkward with each other.
Oh, I don't give a shit. I do not give one shit. When this was happening, I was like, just fucking kiss. Just kiss now. Just kiss.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. Well, no, we're going to sing on the whole
episode. Now. What? They kiss later. We've got a couple more twists in this storyline.
Like, I hate it when they make, like, it's almost like they make Sid revert back to, Alexander Siddig. They make him revert back to
season one
version of him, where he's like, it's you can smell the acting. Like, he is so natural by this stage in Deep Space Nine. Mm-hmm. And then he goes like, oh God, because wouldn't it have been awful if we'd kissed or anything?
Because we totally don't fancy each other.
I would have been avoiding you otherwise.
We're two grown-up consenting adults who clearly fancy each other, but for reasons.
We won't do anything until the end of the episode.
But other news, they get a new Defiant and they can rename it Defiant. Yay! Yeah,
why not Defiant A? Why not Defiant? There is no, like, it is a ship which has proved itself. It is a legacy. Yeah. Like, and they're going to have the same.
It should have been the Defiant A,
Like, at least should have had a different registry, because, like, you've got the same captain, so that's going to be confusing as hell for the logs. You know, it makes no sense.
74205A, job done.
Yeah.
I don't get why.
I think anybody that yes now would agree 100%. And I think it's one of those strange things at this point. We'd seen it with the Enterprise in the movies, but no other ship had become.
Yeah, maybe.
This is the first sort of legacy ship that we've had. Although they've established it with the Enterprise that you have legacy ship.
I appreciate what you guys said when we were watching Picard, and you guys said it's like with the Stargazer. Well, the first one, really, other than the fact that we know about it because we followed Picard, it didn't do anything that spectacular. Like, it had one cool maneuver it did, which, which got named, the maneuver, like, correctly got named the Picard maneuver, because, like, that deserved infamy. But other than that ship didn't do anything to deserve its A.
Yeah.
Fine, all good with that. But this one has done so much shit already.
The fight has started a war with another quadrant.
I mean, maybe they'll paint an A on if it survives the next few episodes. I know why they do it.
They do make a concession that you can tell it's a different ship.
Yeah.
Because the San Paolo has different coloured carpet.
Yeah. And I think just from an audience point of view, I would have quite liked it if they'd have got a different type of ship just for fun. But obviously, we've got all the models and the CGI and everything, so that's why it's got to be the Defiant.
Well, also, we love the Defiant as well. I think there is a sentiment
to it. Going back to what you just said there, we've got the models and the CGI. We've moved to quite a lot of CGI at this point. Mm-hmm. And that'll be one of the reasons why it was an issue making it an A. Because if it was just a model, they could have painted the A on for shots, but then you can't reuse any previous shots. Which is making it a Defiant. That's why it just became a Defiant.
But I thought there's that many, like, reuse shots.
That's from a production point of view.
No, but I'm just saying, for production, I doubt there's that many, like, reuse shots in this.
Having said that, I did wonder about that, and I thought, I bet they've called it Defiant so they don't have to change any of the... But the numbers are actually different, because the Defiant was an NX, and this one's an NCC. There is actually...
Because it would have been... Maybe that's their nod, because they've now established by... No, they haven't. Yeah, because they later on established, obviously, the Enterprise had an NX before it was USS. So it could count that that's what they do before they start the numbering system. They go from NX to USS.
But then the war
there's actually
USS
a plan for it.
Defiant before, because there was the Defiant in the original series.
It was NCC.
Oh, but that still works, because, like, the Defiant in the original one, this is like a prototype one, so it gets the NX.
Mm.
So when it goes from NX version to, like, NCC.
Yeah, so there's a lineage.
This version of the ship, the lineage. The other Defiant isn't connected to this one, even though.
Yeah, there's a new lineage.
Defiant, actually, this, that is a good excuse for it.
The other Defiant also wasn't the legacy ship, because in this universe, the Constitution legacy, sorry, the Constitution Defiant didn't do anything special. It just got destroyed by the Defolians. We know that it hadn't had a future thing in the universe, but in our in the main universe, it's not like it's a ship. It's
no, that's definitely separate from it. But yeah, I'll buy that. It going from NX to USS is kind of like what they let establish with Enterprise. So that does kind of work. But
there
it would have been nice, because we said about having another ship. I would like it to have been the Defiant as it looks, but maybe like done what they did with the Enterprise D in All Good Things, had it beat maybe like a few extra guns come out
put
somewhere.
Put some more
something.
Guns on it. Yeah,
like, that'd you know, and good. If you want to keep some establishing shots, you just have a part of the ship it comes up from, or you know.
Yeah, we've got the special brain killing gun now.
That would have been
anyway. So Garak finally gets back to Cardassia. Only because they get blown up. They get betrayed by one of these gulls that they were going to recruit to the resistance.
Oh, he was a right gull to cock.
He was.
Oh. Good one.
And this leads to them going to find shelter with Mira, who it's never said. Yes. She's totally Garak's mum, isn't she? I mean,
well, in the audio, they say that it's his mum.
In a stitching time, he says it's his mum.
Yeah.
And it makes sense that she's his mum. That an Abrantane had a kid out of wedlock with his housekeeper.
Yeah.
And that's why he couldn't admit that it was his son.
Yeah, it does.
There's so many like little looks, which is like, again, I mean, I've got to be honest, when I've got to say, before reading the book or listening to the audiobook, I might have noticed it on a rewatch, but I've got to admit, I never picked up on that kind of like latent thing of that being his mum. But I kind of love that about it. It's a bit ambiguous, so that if you don't know, notice the kind of like little intimacy between them, there's something more there, it seems like. You know, it could just be a favorite housekeeper who kind of really raised him while his dad was like basically just teaching him to be a callow bastard. Like she taught him actually to be, I couldn't say human being, but that speciesist, a Cardassian being.
She taught him not to be a sadistic maniac.
Garak showing affection, genuine, unguarded affection towards anyone. It's like, there's got to be something there. And then back on the station, Bashir tells Odo about the disease, and so we're starting to sprinkle the seeds there to what's going to be Odo's ultimate fate, because he's rightly angry about it, which...
Well, it's like, right, I've not contracted a disease. You guys gave me a disease to commit genocide on my people.
Exactly.
On the off chance that I would meet them and join and link with them. You did this before I'd met them.
Yeah, and what was I'm trying to remember, there was like something like just his exit line, just a really shirty fuck you line to Sisko. Essentially, it just reminded me of Neil Patrick Harris and his recent appearance in Dog 2 as the Celestial Toymaker, when he goes, well, that's all right then. It feels almost like Odo's doing that. It's like, if you need to do that to keep it secret for the Federation, well, that's all right then.
Yeah. Like, when he confronts Sisko about it, and Sisko goes, I'm angry about it that they did it. And I told them, and they agree, we're not going to share it with the...
Yeah, that's the it. We're
not going to share the cure. We've got millions of people still dying at war with us.
Yeah, and we're not going to give them an advantage.
So you're justifying genocide.
Yeah.
And that's it. It's the fine line, isn't it? It's like Sisko's not justifying genocide. It's the Batman thing. It's like, I don't have to kill you, but I'm not going to kill you. And I don't have to save you either.
I mean, like, I know we backed and forth about the causes of the war and why they got into it, and we won't get into that now. But it's kind of interesting to note that they have a very Star Trek out here of offering them a cure in exchange for peace. Yeah. So Star Trek and Starfleet goes against it. Weirdly enough, it feels even more to me more coldly anti-usual Starfleet than Pale Moonlight. Pale Moonlight was Sisko deciding to take this action on his own for the greater good. This is the whole of Starfleet.
This decided we are committing genocide. This is some, like, the beating war. This is some more scared than they are with the Borg.
Yeah,
because they've gone, we're committing genocide straight away. Like, they made this decision years ago before Earth was attacked.
They didn't as such. Section 31 made the decision, and now Starfleet are choosing not to undo it effectively.
Yeah. I mean, you can argue that in Pale Moonlight, he's basically, it's what's happening. He is just manipulating the situation so the Romulans are coming on their side, but it's to lead to an end to the war, not to, like, exterminate the founders. Here it's out and out just genocide, like you guys say. It's pretty cool.
Or more correctly, it's actually xenocide. Because it's killing an alien species.
Oh, true. Okay.
It's the correct term.
There we go. And I'm sure that's less bad on the cosmic scale.
No, it's not.
Actually, it's worse than that because it's a hole, yeah.
So then on to lighter things, kind of. The Dabo girls want to keep more of the tips, and this is where Zek calls Quark. Well, and like I say, it's one of the most telegraphed twists ever.
Yeah. This is one of those. This is obviously aimed at the restaurant trade in America and how it works. Mm. Like, in America, the waitresses are literally paid minimum wage, if any wage. Some of them aren't paid a wage at all.
Paid anything, a lot of them, yeah. But
the wage is what they get on tips. And you can imagine, Quark has got them here, right? You come to work for me, you're doing 80 hours a week, or whatever he's got working. And I'm not going to give you any money for it, but you can have 80% of the tips. You're going to pay me 20% of what people sat in here give you.
Yeah. It's very Ferengi.
Yeah, I mean,
American.
I ask the Americans to remember when we forget to tip or we don't understand tipping, because it's because everything's paid for within the wages of these people. Like, serving staff are paid a wage. We still do tipping sometimes, but it's not kind of as endemic. It's not as kind of like...
But
like, if we don't tip, and we don't tip a certain percentage, then it's not like they're not getting paid enough to any more than the rest of us. It's not like they're not getting paid enough to live. But, like, you know, that's endemic everywhere at the moment. But I'm just saying, it's like their wages are calculated to pay a whole wage as opposed to that's a certain wage and the rest
the
is
difference
tip.
Is we pay our workers generally.
But that's why we don't tip per beer, which they do.
We don't tip for everything, and we don't generally tip 17% or what have you.
So it's not as being stingy, it's just it's
we've
not
had a lot
the same
drink.
Culture.
No, it's a very different cultural thing. You get this static and Zek, and I'm so happy to see you, my boy.
You're right, okay there, Rob?
Yeah. I mean, you can still blatantly hear Rob.
There's no problem, no question whatsoever, and Quark really should have seen it coming.
They shouldn't, because who'd have expected that? You'd think Rob would be the an ideal candidate for Grand Nagus.
That's true. I mean, yeah.
Although when he starts, when Grunt comes into it and Grunt starts telling him what's happening, then he should have started maybe twigging, maybe the...
Yeah, Grunt's fun in this episode because he's been this antagonist to Quark all the way through the series.
Oh, he's been a nasty bastard.
Oh, and... but he looks so tired here, almost like he's doing the work of two people in this episode. I don't...
Yeah. I mean, that's... I asked Elliot to put it in the thumbnail for the episode.
I did do it. Do you know how hard that was? Yeah.
So I apologise.
Anyone who doesn't realise, he also plays... Jeffrey Combs plays Brunt and plays...
The only episode they appear together, and the guest credit says Jeffrey Combs as Wayoon and Brunt, and I just love it.
I did get a screen grab of it, and it is in the thumbnail.
So you did, yeah.
Because it was really difficult to actually take out everything and just leave the text there. All my background erasers did not want to know what I was trying to do.
The only thing I could think of was there was an interview, which I think was on What They Leave Behind, but it was with Nana Vista, and she's talking about wearing the Kardashian makeup in one episode where it's Second Skin, I think it is. And she goes about, like, yeah, when she gets to the end of the day, and they go, it's like, oh, just one thing is, she goes, no, I'm done. This is coming off now. And she's talking about her admiration for people who wear this in loads of episodes.
Yeah.
And I could just imagine Jeffrey Combs is like, oh, I'm sorry, sorry. Do you want to tell me more about how you hate wearing this makeup? Let me just remove my Ferengi ear before they put my Vorta ears. How much a pain in the ass it was in that one episode.
It'll have been really interesting to see how they block this episode out today. I would guess that they'll have filmed all the Wayoon scenes in a couple of days and then all the Brunt scenes. But Jeffrey Combs earned his... I wonder if they paid him twice for this episode. They should have done.
You'd assume
he should have been paid for playing Brunt and for playing Wayoon. And if he didn't, his agent needs to pull his socks up because he's in this episode twice. But yeah, I love Brunt toadying up to Quark for a change. But there's not much substance to that storyline. I mean, I do quite like the bit where you've got Quark moaning about the reforms on Ferenginar, and Rom's going, well, actually, that's a good thing because of this, this, and this. And it does show the contrast between the brothers.
I do like how Brunt's there, like, giving him the pedicure and all that. And he wants to be his financial advisor, and he's going, no, what can I give you? With 40 bricks in the sack.
Yeah.
And that's when Quark realizes there's a problem when he wants him to sign for the bribe.
Yeah, sign for a bribe. Like, what?
It's tax deductible. What?
It's a thin enough plot as it is, and then you've got to spend half of it doing exposition, which don't get me wrong, I think Jeffrey Combs and Armin Shimerman, sorry, just sounding funny tonight for some reason, but yeah, I think they do a great job of naturalizing the exposition as much as they can, but Jesus Christ, they've got to establish so much about how Ferengi societies change, which again is another thing that... Look, don't get me wrong, these episodes are great, but given that you've got 8 episodes, 10 episodes, whatever it is, to tell this story at the end of this, you could have layered some of this stuff earlier, petered out this throughout, as opposed to one episode, you've got to establish everything that's changed in Ferenginar, whereas, you give a scene per thing, you cut a few of the scenes out of this, you add some more of the war stuff into this,
I wonder if it's because we're more used to watching things so much in streaming that we'd expect to see it peppered out a bit further down.
I'm just trying to say
when this was made, if it's like this was very progressive with DS9, as we know, right? Did the huge story arc, and if this is just this sort of a thing about how TV was made back in the day, that you don't throw it into nearly till your penultimate episode, this thing.
Yeah,
they've already come that step. Yeah, it's, I mean, maybe they just weren't.
Peppered.
Maybe they just weren't as familiar with this kind of but they're doing it, you know, they're doing it already. They just don't go that extra mile of
they were very progressive how they were telling the story at the time anyway with the huge acts. So
I think this would have been better. Leave this out of the main arc and just do a fun Ferengi episode earlier in the season before we start the final arc.
Yeah.
Get rid of one of the Ezri episodes that nobody cared about and just dedicate an episode to... But instead, they did that weird Mirror Universe one with Zek. And it'd have probably been better to have... Douglas, that wasn't very good either. In fact, no, not great success with comedy Ferengi episodes, season 7. PTSD Ferengis with Vic Fontaine, great.
Yeah.
Comedy Ferengis, not so good this season.
Also, I mean, it doesn't really lead anywhere towards the end. Like, at least you can say in the next episode, the bit I was saying about, on the last two episodes, the bit which I was saying about O'Brien, at least that kind of, like, that is a logical end point to his story. Like, it makes sense. Whereas, like, Quark, you just spent 7 years reforming his character to be a bit more rounded, to have more to it. And it's like, now I'm going to go back to traditional Frank. I mean, it's fun. Like, that's a fun scene. And it's fun when he does that. Like, now I'm going to start watering down the drink. Like, this far no further.
He's selling all his sap in front of all his customers. Water down the drinks.
What I love about that is, like, because I thought that he's doing it in front of the customer, then I thought, no, he loves his Ferengi so much that Ferenginar, that he is going to say this in front of everyone because he doesn't care. He wants everyone to know.
Yeah.
I get that, but it's like, where does that actually lead with, like, if you think about where you're trying to end Quark, like, you even in that last scene with him and Odo have some sweetness, whereas, like, re-saying his character doesn't really kind of fit anything if you think about it. It's just it's kind of fun in the moment.
Saying he's back where he started, and there's some cute stuff, like he quotes Picard's speech from First Contact, which is fun. And he says, this bar will be the last outpost of the Ferengi, which the last outpost was the episode the Ferengi first appeared in. So there's some fun stuff, but this feels very much like we haven't got any room for any Ferengi stuff in the finale, rightly so.
And how are we going to wrap up these characters?
We've got to wrap up Quark this episode, so let's do that. And it feels a bit half-hearted.
It doesn't land quite how it should.
No, it's not that funny. The Bashir Ezri storyline, so the culmination of their storyline is basically halfway through the episode they decide they're going to be friends, and then they get in a turbo lift together and start making out, and
oh god, even the look where like you see the turbo lift and you see I think what they want Julian to be giving her kind of like bedroom eyes, but he just looks so weird and pervy where he's like going there.
Yeah, he's just sort of hanging about the back, like getting my turbo lift.
Yeah, it comes across more creepy than does sweet.
Yeah, it doesn't work. What does work in this episode, though, I think, is the Damar stuff. And we get some really good stuff there where they're a bit despondent at first. They think that the rebellion's over. But then Kira reads.
You have the broadcast story that they're watching.
Yeah.
That they've hit 18 strongholds. And it's not all 18.
And that's it.
Yeah,
they think it's finished. But Kira realizes, no, this can be more grassroots. This can be.
That's what I love about it. I love the fact that those people died, but they died for a reason. And it's like the whole idea of like flipping it from being these cells to, well, I mean, even if all those cells were completely successful, they're small pockets throughout like this area. They would have taken years to win this, really. Whereas if you get the people upright, that's what actually makes a difference. Well, it's really nicely plotted out. And
that's short-sightedness
You have that despondent bit, don't you, at the beginning?
Yeah.
The first Inceller and Kira goes, right, we've got to do something. We're not going to spend the rest of this war in this cellar. Mm. And Garak and Damar both turn away from her.
Yeah.
Oh, and there's a lovely line where I do love it.
You haven't got an answer what they can do.
Oh, I heard someone saying that you had a secret mountain lair. It's like, and Garrett goes in, it's like, you never told me about that. It's like, I was saving it.
I wanted to I really enjoy that bit. It's almost like... It's a moment of camaraderie between Garak and Damar. Yes. And let's not forget, Damar murdered Garak's true love, or Garak's beard, depending on what your take is on Garak. But, you know, these two characters should hate each other, but there's that moment there. And then there's another moment later on where Damar gives his speech, and he says, you know, we'll fight for our freedom. And Garak shouts, freedom. And I just love, because it shows how calculating Garak is, because he's like, I need to vocally support him at this moment, and that will get other people to cheer it as well. And it's just, even though that is what Garak wants, and it's in his best interest to do it, it's that the master sort of chess player doesn't quite switch off. It's like, this is where that nudge is needed, and he does it.
And you've also had this kind of, like, since they've introduced Damar, they've had this kind of great arc, and they had the bit where it's like he gets basically becomes an alcoholic, and then he throws away the booze, and he gets his confidence back, which Wayne mistakes what that confidence is, but even he sees it. And then you've got to this point whereby he's stepping out of the shadows and he's becoming a leader. Like, he in that moment, he sets forward and goes, like, what do you think you're doing to a Cardassian citizen? And it's just, it's a really lovely moment. It just shows how much
genuinely,
he's grown.
Yeah, he's genuinely becoming a leader and a hero. They've realized that the true power in this is not the man, it's the legend that you can create around him, the harnessing the power of the story with it.
The Dominion have made the mistake, they've made him a master.
They have, exactly.
But he didn't, like, even if he had been killed, as I said, he'd become a martyr at this point, because people were saying, I've seen him here, he's talking to people, he's raising us up. This isn't happening, but it has happened. It's become a martyr. The people are following him still without him being there.
Exactly. That's it. It's the power of a legend rather than...
And even this stage where they know this is their shot, like, I think there is still a kind of thing, like, even when Damar stands forward, it's because something else hasn't worked, or, like, Garrick's got stuck there, basically. So he stepped forward because of that. And it's like, it's not following the plan anymore. It's just like a belief that this is the right thing to do. Like, if we're going to make a stand, we have to do it here, no matter what happens. And it's like, not like they're sure they're going to win. It reminds me of Hamilton. I don't know if you guys there's one lyric which, like, I may not live to see tomorrow, but I'll gladly join the fight. And this is what this feels like. It's like, you know, they're signing up. Like, they know that they're going to make this push. They know this is their best chance. But, like, again, they don't know they're going to win. It's just a kind of case of this is it. And Damar's got to that point. Like, I think early Damar would only have done something if he'd known it would had 100% success. Here, he's just doing it because it's the right fucking thing to do.
And it's not just, like, that it's a huge change for Damar. This is a huge change for Cardassians. You know, this is not how Cardassians operate as a race.
No.
And we are seeing this huge shift in them as a people, in that they finally, sort of, all after all this time, known what the Bajorans felt like. You know, they probably, you would imagine, a lot of them would have more sympathy now to what the Bajorans went through. But
it's hard to say. It depends. How oppressed have the general people been on Cardassian?
Yeah, we don't really know, do we?
Because it's a very funny, like, I imagine that there's a lot of people, like, they talk about every family has lost someone in the war, that they're throwing Cardassian troops.
Yeah, that's it.
So I imagine there's massive conscription, so there probably is a lot of resentment there.
Yeah, and you've also got the fact that they said in other episodes that any site, military sites, they're going to put Cardassians around.
Yeah.
Everyone will have known what they're doing. There is, like, I think they've peppered enough stuff. We know that everyone's aware of it. Like, no one's, no one's in the dark about this. Yeah, what's happening to them?
So I think of all the multiple plots in the episode, that's the one that works.
Yes.
And it's the one that's most arc heavy as well, you know. Yeah. And I think maybe it's a case of bad timing as well as mediocre writing the Grand Nagus storyline, because it doesn't really belong at this stage in the story. No, that we've doesn't. Got much bigger things to be doing right now, you know.
I mean, even with the way they end the Bashir being with Esri, when they're like on the in ops, and it's O'Brien and Worf. Like Worf, of course, there's a lovely comedy moment of putting the lift back down again. That's kind of fun. But it's like you've got O'Brien. Like, I would have thought he'd been punched near going, yeah, boy, you know, like my boy's got it. You know, where is he? It's like, well, I guess they figured that out. It's like, you're not excited at all for your man.
It'd have been, been good if O'Brien had turned to Worf and gone, but he likes me more.
That'd have been the perfect line at that point after what the
That'd have been a good moment,
Maybe even Worf looking confused, like, what? You know, it's like, I think that's what I mean. It's like, it needed some kind of last episode.
Yeah.
And some sign that O'Brien isn't sort of nonchalantly going, well, they figured that out. It's like, well, he's invested, surely.
Yeah. If he turned around to Worf at that point and gone, yeah, but he likes me more. As Worf is pushing lift down. That'd
have been a really funny line. Yeah. And then to remind us that we've got serious galaxy shattering prophecies and all the rest of it, we finish up the episode. We find out that Cassidy's pregnant. And bit of a weird thing about birth control in the 24th century. She says, one of us forgot to get our injection. Why do both of you need injection? You know, I'm not saying it should be the man's responsibility or the woman's responsibility or whatever, but it just seems silly that both people have to get an injection when surely one could do it.
Surely both of you are getting, for women, I'm going to turn the egg infertile. For the men, I'm going to turn the sperm infertile for the
If you're in a couple and you're only having sex with each other, surely only one of you needs to.
Yeah,
and also I would like to think that it's like in like they've got hyperspray, so like why do they need an injection? Just like they could have.
Yeah, I think
it makes them like they're going for a huge procedure. Why can't they just have something themselves? Yeah,
and the fact that if Cassidy has had her injection, it doesn't matter unless Sisko's has his as well.
Right. Yeah, but
makes it all a little bit silly, really, you know?
But I feel like in the same time that Bashir goes like, you've got to come by sick bay for the injection. He could have just come along with hyperspray and like, you've got to shun.
No, it's because it's this enormous big thing that they fire up your knob.
Why is that reminding people? It's like, by the way, if you're going to have some nookie, you better have this. Like, that's not my procedure, surely.
It's that thing, innit? Like, great, I've just got off with this lass, but I've got to go tell the doctor I need an injection now straight away.
Yeah,
you're going to have, isn't it?
You know, this doctor tells
you. No, I think it means like if you're just out on the pull and you know.
Yeah, I've just got with someone, so we're going to start having sex, but I've got to go tell the doctor to get the injection, who I know is on the station.
I need to make sure she's getting the injection as well, because if only one of you has the injection. It cancels out the other person's injection.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
Two thoughts occur if you'll indulge me just very quickly. First one is the fact that Bashir had to go down there and remind him, as opposed to
like, does he keep
this
the track?
This all goes back to Sisko not turning on his email notifications.
You're right.
A reminder, like we do from the NHS today. But also, the second one, just very quickly, because it reminds me of my dad was a chemist. And one of the things he had to give out was the morning after pill. And in a similar situation to what Elliot's describing, sometimes he would get we'd get calls because our phone number was the same one as the shop because we live above it.
Right.
And it'd be someone who needed the morning after pill. So he'd go down on a Sunday morning and I'd hear him sometimes go, he's like, and you couldn't have come before, like you had to wait until the end of the 72 hours or however long it is before you got everything. And in his in my dad's funeral, sorry, I know this sounds really dark, but it's like my dad's funeral, they had one of the doctors from the local surgery, like who spoke on behalf of them. And they go, it's like, and no matter what the time of day is, Roger would happily come to the door and give out people's medication, even on the weekends. And I turn to one of my brothers and go, happily, I think they might have over-gilded that one a little bit. I mean, Jesus, did you hear him swearing as he was coming back up the stairs? I mean, he didn't swear, but, you know, yeah, he was certainly not happy about it. I tell him, I'd hear him actually telling off the people at the door sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, well, you couldn't have got this yesterday when we opened it. Oh, I didn't get around to it. I'm sorry.
I mean, in defense of this, I do like, again, I think it's trying to be sort of mildly progressive in its own way by going, no, the responsibility is on the man to make sure that they're not going to get somebody pregnant. You know, I quite like that, the way Sisko just accepts it, like, yeah, it's my fault, I didn't get my injection. But it, the logistics of it make no sense because
no,
it's, it, it, so it's only
if one of us
you've both got to have it or neither works. It doesn't make sense.
Isn't the responsibility really on the woman to remind the man? Come on, let's just be reasonable here.
No, the responsibility is on the doctor to remind the man.
All right.
Anyway, but yes, Cassidy's pregnant and Sisko and Cassidy are worried that this will be the heartbreak that the prophets warned us about. And you get that moment where Sisko says, I am the emissary of the prophets and I say everything's going to be okay. But you can tell from his look that maybe not.
I also love the fact that it's like, talk about being proved quickly, proved wrong very quickly, like the next, like the last episode. Spoilers, but yeah, he's disappearing for good with like a baby on the way. That's gonna
yeah, well, the prophets warned him.
Yeah, and like Cassidy there goes like, I knew this was to do with the prophecy. I knew it. I bloody
yeah. But it's a good hook for the last episode, and it washes out the taste of the silly Ferengi and the even sillier Bashir and Dax.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, let's set the tables for the next and last episode now, which we will be covering live at the Sci-Fi Weekender, for anybody who's attending.
At the Reed Cutters.
At the Reed Cutters pub, around 1:30, but check our socials for updates on that.
I also think that we might have to look at about 1 o'clock.
Possibly, yeah.
Because they brought the time of the trooper meet forward by half an hour. So I think we need to look at 1 o'clock. So we've got time afterwards to pack up and take our stuff back to caravan.
So keep an eye on the socials.
So, between 1:30 and 1:30, Reed Cutters.
Next Thursday.
Where would they keep an eye on the socials?
They would keep an eye on the socials at RetrekPod on X. RetrekPod@gmail.com if you want to email us. Elliot's on there with Retrek Model Studios on YouTube.
Remember to be subscribed and comment on my 500 subscribers special to be in with a chance of winning this beauty. I will be doing a live stream on the 18th of March, I think it is, the Monday, to see who wins this beauty.
Fantastic. And Dr. Squee, what have we got on the Dr. Squee show?
This week, I'm going back into the Dr. Squee Show archives because, like you guys, I'm busy getting ready for the Weekender. So next 2 weeks is going to be archive episodes. This time, though, I've grabbed another one which was audio only previously, put some pictures to it. So we're going to be enjoying Juliet Landau from 2015, who I spoke
fantastic.
To. She speaks about Buffy, about Edward, about playing Romana on audio, Romana 3 for Big Finish for Doctor Who. Her documentary A Place Among the Dead, and as I mentioned at the beginning, just because I am reusing her her interview, so it seems like a decent thing to do, just a reminder, you can also get Slayers out there, which is an Audible original, which features Juliet Landau in there, which is great, so check that out as well.
Fantastic.
And I just point out, we will be putting out Facebook updates for the Weekender on the High Council of Geeks on Facebook. Sci-Fi Weekender cosplay, Sci-Fi Weekender troopers, Sci-Fi Weekender page, the Retrek page, and our own personal Facebook pages. So plenty of places we will be putting updates of when we're going live.
And yeah, so join us for What We Leave Behind next week. And thanks for trekking with us this time. We will see you next time on the Retrek.
Thank you.
LLP and Dragoth.
Fascinating.